afternoon. Today is Friday, October the 10th, 280th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, back from his cruise.
I came back.
Humboldt, yeah, I know. Neptune kept throwing you back out of the ocean.
I brought water.
Yeah.
It's all salt,
yeah.
Though.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. And the Canadians didn't want you either.
No, they didn't. They wanted to
throw you out of the country. Yeah, so.
They wanted to send me back.
I guess we get.
You're stuck.
Fire Chief Ken Woods!
You're stuck.
This afternoon, we spent a little bit of time. There is an open house tomorrow that threatens to have free hot dogs.
Yeah, I think that's confirmed, in fact, now.
Oh, is it?
There will be free hot dogs.
You saw the hot dog machine go strolling by, getting a little workout earlier in the week, was it?
There are actually hot dogs left over from the guys eating them. So
oh, really?
Hot dogs.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So there'll be a couple hot dogs available. We'll talk a little bit about the open house, what some of the activities are that are going on there. And then we'll also come up to speed a little bit with some medical questions. Could we handle it here? And a quick dabble, I'm sure, with Measure Q. Because otherwise the air would be let out of his tires if he didn't.
That's true.
So we've got a couple different things to talk about, and we'll do that when we come back.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods, a pensive Ken Woods. But before we do, our quote this afternoon. I've got Nancy Astor and Lillian Hellman.
Let's go with Lillian.
Oh, good move. The category is drugs.
Ah, perfect.
Okay, 1962, she was known to have said, quote, "Cocaine isn't habit-forming, I should know. I've been using it for years." nice lead-in, huh?
Yeah, great.
Good job, bud.
What was the other one?
The reason I don't drink is that I want to know when I'm having a good time.
Oh, okay.
That one works a little bit better?
That's better, right.
Yeah, okay. But you missed out on it.
Yeah, I did. Good choice.
Open house tomorrow. What do you want from an open house?
We want to see lots of members of the public down at our station at 533 C Street from 10 o'clock to 3 p.m.
533
C Street.
I thought it was at 6th and C and D.
It is, but the actual address is 533 C Street.
Does that mean you have to come in through the front door?
You can come in the back door. We'll let you in the back door even.
Can I go out the back door?
You can't come in the front.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, you know, we really try to show off to the community what our capabilities are, have a lot of informational and educational type events and demonstrations going on during the day. It's really just a great time for the firefighters to get to mingle with the community, show the community again what our capabilities are, meet with them on a one-on-one basis, and really an exciting time to be with the kids, teach them some fire prevention, fire safety skills, and do all the fun things that we do with letting them sit in the fire engines and see what squirting water's about and all those kind of things. So it's really a great opportunity for us to interact with the community.
Why not have an open house on the medical side? Different time, because obviously, you know, sitting in the ambulance is a little different than sitting inside a fire truck. And
yeah, you know, open house for fire service, it's Fire Prevention Week. It's a national event. It goes on in fire stations all over across the country.
And you know, it's taken off a whole lot more than Cow Examination Week, which was related to.
That's the following week, and that was going to be my next line. So. Our examination is coming.
Okay, good.
So the medical side is part of what we do, you know, we really try to focus on the fire side since it is Fire Prevention Week and teaching fire prevention safety tips, education, and the theme this year is make sure that you have a working smoke detector.
That's a theme? That's really long,
isn't
it?
That's really the national theme.
Oh, okay.
It is.
Okay.
I didn't choose it, but it's a good one.
Good move. Do most fire, or smoke detectors rather, are they electric or do they have the 9-volt battery?
They're battery for the most part. Yeah, there are, you know, newer homes particularly have combination electric and battery with a battery backup. But, you know, the ones that when we're out doing inspections and we find a smoky detector that's not working, we'll pass out one that's a battery operated one.
And the batteries, how long? I know what we tell folks to do.
Right.
Daylight savings time, okay, flip it.
Right. When you change the clocks, change your battery.
Yeah. How long does a 9-volt battery last? Do you know? I have no, I mean, this one's legit. I'm not setting you up for anything.
Yeah, no.
I have no clue how long those things last in a smoke detector.
I've seen them last for, you know, over a year length of time. But we want to make sure that people are changing them with the clocks. And
so if you miss by a week or so, you're okay.
Yeah, you'll be okay, right? The battery technology obviously has improved quite a bit, so it's better. But we want to make sure people are not only changing the battery, but they're testing them too.
And by testing them, you don't mean aerodynamically?
No, we don't. I hadn't thought of that quite. But no, there's a little button you can push, and it will sound a test sound, and you know it's functioning properly then.
See, I remember that. That's going to be,
yeah.
For me, that's one of the highlights of this year so far is somebody throwing the whole detector
right.
out in the lawn.
Exactly.
I had not that thought at all.
Yeah, we do get those. We try to discourage that.
Can commercial buildings use the same detectors that private?
They have different requirements, particularly with new buildings.
Well, let's say it's an older building.
Yeah,
it hasn't been rehabbed.
Can
you just use the old ones?
We'll put in battery-operated ones, particularly for apartment complexes and things like that. You know, you'll find motels with the battery-operated ones as well. So, yeah, you'll see those.
Those are okay to use. I mean, they're not.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, I suppose anything is better than nothing.
It is. They really make a difference. They do save lives. And there's new technology that's being updated all the time now. The newest smoke detectors are sealed. They have a specific life span and type of detection involved with them. But, you know, the older ones, there's plenty of them out there with just the single 9-volt battery. And
the screaming bird stuffed inside. And
that's it.
Boy, talk about shrill. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, cuts through fog.
That's the point.
that's
the point.
Gee, kind of like the lights on the fire truck.
Yeah.
You
hopefully.
Can see them for miles. Isn't that interesting? Okay.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Oh, boy. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:19. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
Attention 6th and 7th grade students. Plan now to attend the Ideas at Work Middle School Career Camp at College of the Redwoods this June. Campers take part in fun, hands-on projects in high-tech labs, tour businesses, and explore careers. There is no cost for this camp, but space is limited. Learn more and apply online at decadeofdifference.org or call 445-7563. Don't wait. Sign up today at decadeofdifference.org and be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Ken, some of the different challenges I know that are out there, sometimes you do it to yourself, sometimes it's done unto you, but either way, you get to deal with it. the discussion around the Ebola,
right.
Ebola, I don't know, whatever.
Right.
Let's just say a medical situation that's a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
If your guys were having to deal
right.
with it, or these were in our area.
Yeah.
Now, you guys still tend to be pretty close to first responder on medical aid.
We are.
The ambulance.
We are.
Take your pick.
Right.
If you have a situation like that, how do you train the troops
right.
to handle it? Or are there experts and you guys just back off and say, this doesn't look like fire to me?
No, I mean, we just received some direction from the Center for Disease Control on how to help identify and what we should be doing, some of the precautions for Ebola. And those were just distributed then to all our firefighting folks. But yeah, we're gonna be the first ones to see it. And you know, before they get transported to the hospital, hopefully we can recognize some of those signs and symptoms that would then alert the not only ambulance staff, the paramedics, but then prepare the hospital for what's coming.
I'm sure that they could do that within 5 minutes. That kind of stuff has got to be a little goofy, a little crazy for you guys, because
it is.
I don't sense, not that I know firemen like you know firemen, but most of the guys get in there because they want to play around with water.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, help people out. Medical response, is not one of those things that is a fireman. I mean, if that's what it is, you're going to come in through a different door. Rather than through the fireman door.
It's really such a large part of what we do that, our guys deal with a whole range of different types of medical calls on a daily basis. So they are keen and aware, and when a directive comes out, particularly on the Ebola thing, that these are things to be aware of, that does trigger in their mind. It's just like when they go to a fire and that it's a certain type of building, there's a specific hazard. We know that there's hazardous material. Boom, the trigger goes off. How do we handle that? And it's the same type of thing with our guys with the medical calls. And they'll key into that and, start asking those appropriate questions. Has the person traveled lately? Where did they come from? All those kind of things. Then what type of precautions do we need to take? Who do we need to alert? And then that works its way up the chain of command. But, whether it's dealing with chest pain and then trying to determine what the cause of that is, or, something is hopefully what we don't see, Ebola, again, you're going to ask those questions and try to direct then from there based on the information you receive.
If it's a contagion, though, that's a whole different ballgame. I mean, you guys don't go running in with masks on. I mean, that's not the normal protocol.
Occasionally we do.
But the first guys going in.
They don't. We take our normal precautions, gloves, eye protection, the basic type of precaution that our guys normally take on medical calls, and we'll start from there, and then again we'll build from there. If it needs to be masks, if we need to isolate, then we'll immediately start to put those things in place.
So what are the keys that your troops look for? I mean, I obviously you can't train to this stuff.
Yeah.
But what is a red flag warning if you're responding to a medical and it's not reported as anything extraordinary, it's just a medical?
Yeah.
How do you guys respond?
And it's really from the questioning that we start to ask the patient. So tell me when you started to feel this way, and it may be, because when I got off the airplane, or maybe I was traveling, or maybe I was working strenuously in the yard. It's those types of questions that immediately start opening the door to other types of questioning, and then those little things kick off in the brain that, I know there's an issue with people that have traveled from Africa with Ebola, and this guy's telling me he was there for 3 weeks, he's just come back. Boom. Okay, so now what are those signs and symptoms we're going to look for that fit into what we're hearing from the Center for Disease Control with Ebola? And then, continuing to take that line of questioning further and start to implement the precautions that we need to do, whether it's a mask, whether it's isolation, those types of things.
So they pretty much are flexible with the questions that they're able to put things together?
Again, when you start to get a little information, then that will direct you on what other questions you need to go by. And that applies to any type of medical call.
That's what I was saying. It's pretty common. As much as anything, it's how do I handle this guy?
Right.
To get him to the ambulance crew.
Yeah, whether it's a diabetic, problem, again, heart problem, a stroke, what are those indicators that are start to pointing us down a road to how best to treat the individual.
KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
Remember the music from your trip to Latin America? You are invited to listen to the newest member of our radio family, 1790 AM, a Spanish language music station with sports from ESPN and news from CNN Español. If you own a business, invite Juan listeners into your business. For information, call 442-5744 or go to juan790.com. Juan790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humble Bay Fire Chief Ken Woods. Ken, looking at some of the work that your compadre across the street is doing in offering services to some of the homeless, but kind of doing a little bit of a hustle also, have you started to see changes?
You know, we really haven't. We're still responding to the same types of calls, fires behind the mall, fires in other areas of town, campfires that get out of control, a lot of drug-related, alcohol-related calls. We haven't seen any decrease in that.
No additional locations or change of locations clusters being not as concentrated?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest concentration, obviously, for us is behind the mall. There's a large concentration of homeless there, of course, and that really hasn't changed. But we are seeing some other areas of town as well, and some of those nuisance fires that are caused by homeless encampments that we haven't seen before other areas. They're sprouting up kind of in a widening circle around town and more frequency as well.
I know you guys got to know where the street addresses are.
Mm-hmm. We try.
makes it a whole lot easier. You hit 5 minutes,
right,
doesn't it? Yeah.
Right. If you see a big column of smoke, though, that's a pretty good tip-off.
As you're trying to find some of these new locations,
mm-hmm.
Does everybody pretty much know where they are, or are you kind of roaring fast and then looking around as you get close?
A lot of times it's looking around. You go to a location where, you know, you have a report of a medical call, and you get there and you don't find anybody there, and it takes some digging, and it may be that, you know, the individual that is called is not the one that needs the help. And that person may be off tending to the sick person, or maybe trying to get back out to the road to alert us. But sometimes it does take some digging and really checking around. And even as far as behind the mall, where, you know, our engines come in on the behind Walmart there on the street, then we have to go back through the gate. And there's a large area back there where we need to identify where the person is and how to get to them as quickly as we can. And sometimes that's a challenge.
In all the years, I've not thought of this question. When you guys show up, do others in the area help? Or do they kind of pretend that you're not there and not help? Or do they get in the way? I've never thought.
It is actually, we get the wide range. We get some very, very helpful people who are pointing us to the right location. Some of the fires we've had a lot of help with people with actually buckets of water and helping to put out the fire because it's infringing and impinging on their encampment. To the other side where, you know, I was behind the mall recently, there was an encampment that was burned out, and the individual was very threatening to me. I was back there. I was trying to investigate what the fire situation was, and I was accused of trespassing on their property, and, you know, I was the one coming into their environment causing the problem instead of, I just told them, you know, I'm here to help. I'm trying to see if you're okay, number one, and we need to put the fire out. So it's a wide range, and we're used to dealing with that.
Really?
Really.
Yeah, so it happens often enough that you're used to it.
Yeah, it's common.
Boy, I get teed off.
You do, but
do you have your axe with you when you're in there?
I had a large flashlight. But
that's almost as handy, yeah.
But you're there to help, and that's what we try to do.
But if somebody was going to confront, say, you know what, okay, guys, let's pull off.
Yeah,
let the fire go.
We will if people
and not worry about it.
Confrontational.
Yeah,
we're going to back off. We're going to ask for law enforcement to come in and secure the area for us. But again, our goal is to try to deal with the problem, whatever it may be. And if it's a medical issue, then deal with that. If it's a fire, let's put the fire out and go from there.
Yeah. Nah, I'd wait 10 minutes before I called and asked for police backup. Somebody has an attitude, you're there to help? I'm sorry.
It's part of the job.
Yeah, you signed up for that part too?
We did.
Oh, well, okay. If it's part of the fireman credo or whatever, you guys sign on.
We're there to help.
Yeah, whether you want it or not.
Yeah, whether they want it or not. Sometimes they don't, but that's our intent.
That would be the fine print. with the unconcentrating or diluting or spreading out or whatever phrase we want to use,
mm-hmm.
with these various areas that are requesting
assistance,
is that eventually could you see that leading to either needing another station, which I know isn't financially viable, but you know where I'm going with it, or having to stage a truck somewhere, or do you just go, you know, we're not going to hit 5 minutes on all of them, and just not worry about that part.
There's, you know, financially the way things are right now, we're not able to change a location or to, you know, expand another station. You know, we may move a specific type of resource. We may move a smaller engine into a station that's particularly serves a specific area where we've had these types of fires. But again, right now, we're not looking at really changing our staffing or adapting to that, because we're just so constrained by our station locations, which for the most part are in good locations. But when you get more out into the Walnut area, cutting further on, as we start to see more people coming into the McKay track with the community forest, then we're going to see more calls for service out there, and there will be things we're going to have to think about for the future, adapting to those changes.
Wait a minute, Hubbard's like, what, 50 feet away?
For that end, but now we've got people coming in at the Ridgewood Walnut end of the K track, which is, you know.
Well, I thought that three lane paved road was going to help take care of
that's
all that.
Next week, yeah, we're not quite there.
Oh, not okay. And I wish I knew the name of this the town that was back there, but the old town the historic old town that's located now.
Falk?
I may lose you. No. Behind the old Pepsi bottling, which I know, the Mac Center.
Okay.
Okay, that old town that's back in there. I've been hearing that there's a lot of additional response in that area. Because it's out there and there's not a road.
Right.
There's not easy access. The fireboat doesn't, you know, drafts more than 2 inches at low tide. So that's not.
Right.
Those types of locations, are those the problematic ones?
Those aren't as much. We've been able to get back there and at least get string hose lines where we need to. It's really more, again, when we talk about the McKay track in that area back there, when we talk about the end of F Street and back on that part of town there, you know, those are locations off part of the Hicksaw Trail, where the very south end of the trail, where we can't get our trucks back in there. And, you know,
so it's gullies, ravines, that kind of stuff,
yeah,
rather than
a lot
flats.
Of that. Right, exactly. And again, fires in the brush that we just don't have access to. We have to, you know, our guys break out with the hand tools and the backpacks and go out there and try to put
you leave the bellows
there.
On the truck, though, right?
Yeah, we usually do.
Good deal. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:43. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the shopping show website.
Theshoppingshow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next shopping show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:46. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Ken, this is the last time that you're going to have the opportunity to talk about Measure Q.
Right.
Yeah. Between now and Election Day.
Right.
I know most of the department heads historically, whether it's county or cities, have multiple budgets.
Mm-hmm.
If this here, if that here.
Right.
Have you done, of course, you're not dealing with an two budget cycles out, you're dealing.
No, it's
so it's a little bit more, I guess, theoretical at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But do you have a plan?
Yeah, the plan is we're going to have, if Measure Q should fail, we're going to have to lay off firefighters and close a fire station. There's just no two ways about it.
What does that translate to?
Dollar-wise?
No, for okay, there's a fire.
It translates to longer response times. The station we would look at closing would be our Myrtle Street station. And so obviously for those people in that district, they're going to see longer response times. When we do have a fire, right now we have five stations. We commit four of our resources to a fire, which leaves one available for other calls. We do get a lot of simultaneous calls. So now everything, all four, would have to go to that one fire, and we wouldn't have other units available to other calls.
Do you go 4+0 instead of 3+1?
Yeah. we're going to stay where we're at. We need the minimum number of firefighters on scene for a fire. So we're going to be depending more on outside agencies, mutual aid, to come in and assist us on those larger type of calls. And the converse applies. When we go to get called to other jurisdictions to help out, we have less resources left in town to be able to cover our own calls. So, you know, we feel we've done a good job in cutting and consolidating, being more efficient, being more effective with our consolidation that we've put in place. You know, we've reduced the number of resources as far as engines that we have, saving money there. We've consolidated and combined positions, reducing duplication. Joint purchasing is saving us dollars. All those kind of things that help us to reduce costs. And just like everyone else, you know, and medical costs are going up. Our retirement costs have gone up. We don't have control over those. And we need to make do with what we have, and we're trying to do that with through consolidation and really saving money, being more efficient, more effective there. And, you know, I think we've done a good job with that, and there's more we can obviously do. But if Q should fail, you know, there's going to be consequences, and we're going to have to make the changes necessary. And part of that will be to close a station and, you know, reduce the number of firefighters we currently have.
Why, with the problem you have with the plumbing situation with the Pearson Mall fire station and the physicalness with the one at Myrtle Grove Cemetery, if Q does pass, does that get you a firehouse?
No, it maintains the status quo because it isn't a new tax, because it's the same tax that's been in place for the past 5 years. You know, this just keeps us level where we are. So we're looking with our efficiency and effectiveness to save money, but yet just continue where we're at and make positive changes going forward. And if it doesn't pass, we're going to have to be scrambling.
So how do you get those fire stations replaced that need replacing?
That's a good question. We haven't figured that one out yet. That's something that we're going to have to try to tackle down the road, because they are, a couple of them are getting pretty darn old, and we're really having some problems with them.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Don't burn too much along with the hot dogs tomorrow.
Okay.
Just a little culinary advice.
All right. Thanks.
From right here. We've been talking shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.